Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something awakens imagination, empowers storytellers, and connects the Missoula community through the transformative power of personal storytelling. It is a celebration of each other, our stories, and how we move through the world together. All of the stories that tell us something are true. Stories last for 10 minutes and are told from memory. Everyone is welcome to tell a story. The Missoula community comes together for a night of true personal stories, shared live, focused on a theme. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This episode of the Tell Us Something podcast was recorded in front of a live audience on December 8th, 2015 at the Wilma in Missoula, Montana. Eight storytellers shared their story based upon the theme, Illumination Revelation. This edition of the Tell Us Something podcast is brought to us by Bill McDavid and is titled, So the People Will Live. Thank you for listening.
You guys can't tell I just peed in my pants a little bit, right? I know you're thinking, what's this guy wearing? It's a little bit of the story. We dance so the people will live. That was the answer I got when I asked the Crow Indians why they danced the sun dance about 25 years ago. I was raised in Alabama, and we, all right, that's a surprise. We really had no Indians around in Alabama, but I was fascinated with them. I saw them in photographs and history books and in movies. And if you grew up in the 70s, you remember the Keep America Beautiful campaign. There was that Indian that the tear came down his cheek as he watched all of us white people litter his mother earth. And man, I really wanted to be an Indian. And that fascination stayed with me until I was a preteen. And at that point, hormones took over and girls, guitars, a few other things got in the way of that. And then some years later, I was in law school. And I went to see a film with my aunt. And it was the first time I had ever seen Dances with Wolves. And when Kicking Bird came out on the screen, I leaned over to my aunt and I said, I'm going to make and I'm going to wear clothes like that someday. So the next day, I went to the library and I checked out a whole bunch of books. And they were all the wrong books. And so I started ordering these books from obscure publishers that nobody's ever heard of. And they were on things like how to brain tan buckskin and how to do beadwork and make bows and arrows out of wood. Pretty soon, I had a whole wardrobe. Leggings, moccasins, war shield, everything. But you just didn't wear that kind of thing in Alabama. So it was about maybe a year or two later after graduation, I moved to Montana. And I moved into a teepee on the banks of Rock Creek out here east of Missoula. And I wore those clothes almost every day while I studied for the bar exam under the light of a Coleman lantern. And I was also looking for a job, right? Every fresh grad needs a job. So I saw a job posted at the law school. It said Crow Tribal Prosecutor. That seemed like a dream come true, right? So I sent him a resume and I got an interview. That interview is a whole other story in and of itself, but suffice it to say, I got the job. And I accepted, and I had no clue what I was in for. So I moved to Crow Agency. My first day, a woman came up to me in the tribal court. She was a clerk, and she looked pissed off. And she started poking me in the chest. And her jaw began to quiver as she spoke to me. I just want you to know I don't trust none of you white people. I never have and I never will. Custer Died for Your Sins. That's a great book. It's one of many that I read leading up to this that gave me some understanding as to why there might be a little bit of legitimate resentment. So I tried to let it slide off. Fortunately, there were a lot of others on the res who saw my sincerity and my desire to become an Indian. And so they started inviting me to all these things that I could have only dreamed about. Sweat lodge ceremonies, 2 or 3 times a week. I was going to bundle ceremonies. I was going to dances in the middle of winter when there certainly were no tourists around. I learned how to play hand games. I stayed up until 4 in the morning, nights on end, playing in these tournaments. I was living a modern-day Dances with Wolves, and it was a dream come true, but at every one of these events, or almost every one, there was somebody there. Oftentimes, it was this woman who poked me in the chest that went out of their way to really make me feel uncomfortable, and they succeeded. But I succeeded because I'm stubborn, and so I stayed. And one night, I was in the sweat lodge with I had a family that adopted me there, and I was invited to dance the Sundance the following summer. And that was a great honor, and needless to say, I accepted immediately, because if you're going to be an Indian, you've got to dance the Sundance, right? But honestly, I did so with a lot of trepidation inside. If you've seen A Man Called Horse, you know why. Maybe you've seen it in other depictions I had, and I knew that it always involved a lot of blood, piercing of the chest and of the back, and I'd seen the scars in the sweat lodge. There was, you know, they would drag buffalo skulls around the lodge. They would even hang from the pole until their flesh broke. And that did not sound very appealing to me. But I was going to be an Indian. So, over the many months of preparation, you can imagine the relief that I felt when I came to find out that this particular dance that I would be dancing was going to be a non-piercing ceremony. I can handle this. Well, so what was it then? Well, it was 3.5 days of dancing and fasting. And fasting, to the Indians, is serious business. There's no food and there's no water the whole time. By the second day, I had no concern for food whatsoever. All I could think about was water. Just one drop to get me through another hour, maybe another day. I remember looking up at the stars in the middle of the night, wondering what would happen if I were to drink the saline solution that I'd been allowed to bring in to manage my contact lenses. Obviously, that would have been a mistake, so I didn't do that. So I just kept dancing. And all the while I'm dancing, I'm floating above this scene, and I'm looking down at myself with a great deal of scorn and ridicule. Who do you think you are, man? Look at you. You look ridiculous. So I clenched that eagle bone whistle in my teeth, and I held my eagle feathers, and I just kept dancing. And the final day came, and it was only after what seemed like an excessive and unnecessary amount of ritual and prayer and ceremony that they brought in the water, that the water ladies had gone up to the Bighorn Mountains and gotten out of a spring. And they brought it in these big metal containers that were sweating, because it was blisteringly hot. This was August. And my body was not sweating anymore at this point, because you lose everything. And this is a time that my white privilege did not put me at the front of the line. I had to wait my turn for the water. And then it was my turn, and I got a little cup. And I remember pouring it into my body and feeling instantaneously that it was penetrating every cell of my body with life. I swear I could feel it in my fingernails. After that, we filed out of the lodge, and there were all these people there to greet us. They'd been there all along to help us with things that we needed. And among them was this woman who poked me in the chest that first day. But as she approached me, her face looked very different. And she held out her hands briefly and took mine just quickly. And she said, "Thank you." And things started to come into focus at that moment. So I left and I went home. Only after, mind you, I went to Pizza Hut. I had been told repeatedly that you should have some crackers and some soup and take it easy, but pepperoni. So I went home and I sat on the couch and I looked out my window. I didn't live in a teepee at this point. And I watched the most beautiful sunset you can imagine. And I started to bawl like a baby with this revelation that I had failed at becoming an Indian. I didn't dance the sun dance so that the people will live. I danced out of some sense of spiritual materialism. And we white people are good at that. Like I was going to pack it all up into a little box and tuck it under my arm and go home and use it up for me. And that's why I was so angry with myself while I was dancing. And that is not how you become an Indian. Aho.
Thanks, Bill. Bill McDavid once convinced his father to buy him a pet duck because he thought he wouldn't have any interesting stories to tell without a duck. Bill McDavid is a photographer who grew up in Alabama. He moved to Montana for its beauty and photographs it every day. His photographs have appeared in or on the BBC, The Wall Street Journal, The Robb Report, Central Yisure, Montana Fly Fishing, Northwest Fly Fishing, The Land Report, and Open Fences. You can learn more about Bill and see some of his photographs at BillMcDavid.com. Tell Us Something is proud to be fiscally sponsored by Missoula Community Foundation, a 501c3 organization. Missoula Community Foundation has been providing leadership to Missoula nonprofits and inspiring long-term philanthropy in Missoula since 2007. For the good of Missoula, forever. MissoulaCommunityFoundation.org. Thanks to our title sponsor for 2015, The Bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. And thanks to all of our sponsors, Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years, the Top Hat hosts a variety of Montana-based artists and has become a destination for national touring musicians. In addition to great music, the Top Hat hosts comedy shows, film, performance art, and storytelling. The Top Hat also offers a unique dining experience centered on local, house-made ingredients. Dining made different. TopHatLounge.com. The Wilma, a locally owned and independently operated venue, the Wilma has anchored the Missoula cultural and entertainment scene for almost 100 years. Constructed in 1921 as a vaudeville house, the Wilma was utilized as a movie house for the majority of its history. In the 1980s, the Wilma began to once again host live entertainment. Now, the Wilma is a state-of-the-art live music facility within a spectacular historic building, thewilma.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at cashforjunkersmusic.com. Podcast production by Ashley Nielsen. Thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and most especially to the storytellers, Mark Moss, Becky Spica, Andy Helzel, Carla Thailand, Ben Brewer, Joyce Gibbs, Marley Sporchers, and Bill McDavid. Remember, your story matters. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Check the website to find out how you can tell your own story and learn about the themes for the 2016 season. TellUsSomething.org.